This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
I know that you thought that the COVID crisis was over, but maybe not. Today on Viewpoint, we're going to be taking a look at the most recent issues concerning the matter of COVID and the shots, as they're called. Some called them vaccines. They were not truly vaccines, as you know, because they didn't meet a standard for vaccine that caused the CDC to actually revise the definition of a vaccine in order to try to use the term vaccine. But President Donald Trump has signed an executive order halting federal funding for schools that mandate the COVID vax. In other words, he's saying, look, this was not working. It didn't work, and we're not going to play this game anymore. On the other hand, the World Health Organization has come out and revealed that COVID vaccines caused global kidney failure, a surge in global kidney failure. In addition to that, believe it or not, the Center for Disease Control for its 2025 vaccine schedule includes COVID shots for six-month-olds, as if we didn't sow enough damage into their lives earlier. COVID shots increased the risk of asthma for kids, according to the World Tribune. COVID mRNA shots dramatically increased the risk of becoming severely ill or dying, says another report. They found that the modern modem RNA injections carry such a high risk of dangerous adverse events that it would be safer to catch the virus without being vaccinated than to take one of the shots. Another study, myocarditis and pericarditis only appear in children after a COVID vax, not the infection, after you get the vax. A peer-reviewed study of 9 million downplayed a 620% increased risk of myocarditis after COVID shots. Then, another study links third mRNA vaccine dose to increased cancer mortality, and then they can't understand why our young people, our teenagers, are succumbing to more and more cancers that are appearing never before found in medical history. And finally, a judge allows ivermectin-related lawsuit to proceed. And I want to share this with you, my friends, in a little bit more detail before we introduce our guest, the most dangerous man in Washington. Or at least some have called him the most dangerous man in Washington, not Washington, D.C., but Washington State, a land where they worship trees rather than the creator of the trees. But here on Viewpoint today, he's going to be joining us in just a few minutes. But in front of me is a recent issue of the Epoch Times, and I want to share some excerpts to lay the foundation for what we're about to talk about further here on Viewpoint today, of which I welcome you aboard. Mount Sinai South Nassau in New York City was twice forced to give COVID-19 patient Deborah Bucco, who was close to death after the system's normal treatment failed, ivermectin under court order. So the court ordered the hospital to give Deborah Bucco ivermectin. Ms. Bucco's condition improved after she began taking the ivermectin. However, the system stopped the second round of treatment before the prescription ended and Ms. Bucco died. After being sued, Mount Sinai said the lawsuit should be thrown out because the hospital is immune. So a motion to dismiss by Mount Sinai Hospital, though, was rejected by the New York Supreme Court. Mr. Mantle, who had sued Mount Sinai, according to the lawsuit, after being admitted to Mount Sinai with suspected COVID-19, He alleged that Ms. Bucco's condition was not improved by the system's standard treatment protocols, including supplemental oxygen. She was ultimately placed on a ventilator. Mr. Mantle researched alternative treatments and read about how some patients had recovered after being treated with ivermectin. He learned that the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance features ivermectin in its COVID-19 treatment protocol, and so he presented what he had learned to doctors at Mount Sinai. Dr. Robert Clark, one of the doctors, said that he was all out of bullets and that ivermectin might be able to help Ms. Bucco. So he wrote a prescription on April 7, 2021 for 5 days of treatment. Mount Sinai's pharmacy department, however, placed the prescription on hold, and the system stewardship committee rescinded the prescription written by the doctor. Mr. Mantle took the matter to court, resulting in an order to immediately start giving Ms. Bucco ivermectin. After being treated with ivermectin, Ms. Bucco's condition improved. The initial prescription ended and her recovery stalled, so Mr. Mantle went back to Dr. Clark, who was said to have acknowledged that ivermectin had helped Ms. Bucco get better and could help keeping her improved. So he wrote another prescription, this time for 35 days. The hospital rescinded the prescription again, prompting the family to seek legal redress, and the system was ordered again to enforce the prescription. Ms. Bucco improved further with the second round of ivermectin, but the system changed the prescription and stopped administering it after 5 days. Dr. Clark informed that he was being prevented from writing any additional ivermectin prescriptions by the hospital. Once Ms. Bucco stopped receiving ivermectin, her condition deteriorated rapidly and she died. The family is seeking damages as determined by the court and a jury. And they say this fight is not just about Deborah, but for all Americans. What happened to Deborah must never be allowed to happen again, they say, and those responsible for her tragic death must be held accountable. I share that story with you, not because you know who this woman who passed was, but because it's symptomatic of a much bigger picture, a picture that thousands, millions of Americans, in fact, millions of people all over the world suffered under because of medical protocols that were not true. That means that somebody out there, maybe somebody, might have known something different, might have been able to do something if they had the courage to do it. But if you're bound by protocols, you ignore principles. You even ignore the realities of scientific practice because protocols become your servant, well, not your servant, but your master. And so today on Viewpoint, we're going to meet Scott Miller. His book features a very handsome-looking gentleman on the front cover, and the title is called The Most Dangerous Man in Washington. We're not talking about Washington, D.C. now. We're talking about the state of Washington, and he's joining us here to talk about his story. And a story it is. You're going to find out why a man who was in the medical profession decided to, shall we say, risk it all in order to do what the Hippocratic Oath required, and that is to do no harm, but to heal. We'll be right back with Scott Miller in just a few moments. I hope you'll stay tuned, friends. You don't want to miss a word of what he has to share with you from a broken heart. We'll be back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Late that night, I was wandering around our backyard, said our guest today, asking myself, why am I doing this? How aggressively can I keep pushing back against the state before they destroy me? With patients this sick, there is no second place. There is no runner-up. There's only living and dying. And so we welcome today Scott Miller from the state of Washington, or wherever he is now, because he had to flee the state of Washington because of the medical persecution that he endured as a result of trying to do the Lord's work to heal people who were being rejected by medical protocol. He shares his extraordinary journey from a pediatric practitioner to a reluctant hero during a global crisis. So, Scott, it's so good to have you on the program here today. It's a delight to have been exposed to your book, which I've gone through very carefully, highlighted many things that have stood out to me. It takes courage to stand in an evil day, doesn't it?
Yeah. First of all, it's a pleasure to be on. Thank you so much for having me. It's a funny word, because when you're in the moment, because we have choices that we can make every day that
sure
that determine how we're going to engage with, you know, with our environment, with other people. You know, and so I don't, you know, as I've reflected back, and part of kind of the catharsis of writing the book, when you're in it, I didn't look at anything that I did as courageous. I looked at it as necessary.
Right.
And you and I chatted a little bit about it. But one of my premises, and it, you know, so much of it, just when I say so much, I mean, every core principle stems from my conviction and my faith. What's a human life worth? What's the value of a life? And, you know, and it's not funny, but because people from all over the country were reaching out, and mm-hmm. there were times where my wife would say, "Well, do you know them?" And even friends of mine or colleagues, "Well, Scott, you can't heal the world." And I'm like, "I know the world isn't reaching out to me, but, you know, today these 35 people who are acutely ill were reaching out."
Mm-hmm.
And
well, how did they find out about you, though? If you're in the state of Washington, which was becoming increasingly the state of misery, how were they finding out about you?
So I was pretty vocal early on. Well, not like March, April of 2020, but once May hit and I was seeing, you know, really it started because of the damage I was seeing to my, you know, to the pediatric population, the anxiety, the depression, the isolation, the you know, I call it, you know, the war on our children.
Right.
And, you know, it was something that I couldn't fix. You know, it was something that I couldn't just magically make go away unless I became very active. And I'm going to tell a quick story. I had students. I was a preceptor, so I had students with me throughout that entire time. And I sent one of my students in to go do a well child check. And they're like 7 and 9 year old girls. And she came back and she said, "Yeah, everything's good. There's no concerns." And I'm like, how are there no concerns? It's, you know, April of 2020, schools are shut down. So I walked into the room and I sat down and I knew the mom. And I just looked at her and I said, "How are you doing?" And she said, "Fine." And I put my hand on her and I looked at her and I said, "How are you doing?" And I just stared at her and I watched her face change and I saw like tears started to form.
Yeah.
And she broke down crying and she was talking about how hard it was and you know, where, I mean, they were literally isolating, and it was the best prescription I ever wrote in the entirety of my career. I walked to my office and I grabbed my prescription pad, triplicate form, and I wrote a prescription for her to take her kids to the park and invite the neighbors who were their best friends that they hadn't seen in like 6 weeks.
Wow.
She said, "Well, what if?" She's like, "But the parks are closed." I'm like, "No, they're not. There's like tape over it. Just step over the tape." And she said, "Well, what if the police come?" And so I was like, so I wrote my cell number on the prescription. I said, "If for some reason the police come, you call me and I will drive to the park."
Wow.
And 2 hours later, roughly 2 hours later, I got a text and it was a picture of her kids with the neighbor kids all holding hands at the park. And I was like, see, I mean, that's one person at her, one family at a time. But I thought, you know, I can do something. And if I do it on a grander scale or a bigger scale, maybe I can encourage people to start, you know, stripping off this yoke of tyranny.
Well, Scott, you know what this reminds me of is a quote by Edmund Burke back in not so jolly old England. He said, I can't do everything, but I can do something. What I can do, I should do, and by the grace of God, I will do. And even though I don't believe you quoted that in your book, that really is what drove you to continue to press on in spite of massive resistance that took on not only accusations, but also legal proceedings that destroyed your practice.
Yeah, it was not, again, I am going through it. It was war. I mean, it was, when I say I liken it to war, I mean, it was a battle. I was in a battle against the school systems. I was in battle against the pharmacies and battle against the local and state department of health against.
In other words, the trenches were not out there in some far-flung field, but were right there at home, and you were in the trenches, and the shots were being fired over your head, and dozens were dying.
If you went to the hospital, I need to tell a quick story. And I was so this was later on, in like summer of 2021, and there was a pastor Brad Worry. Mm-hmm. Battleground Church on the Rock, and I found out about it from a good friend of mine. He said, Scott, there's a church that's in person. It's a tent church, and they literally erected this tent. And so I was like, that's so cool. I have to go check it out. And so it was one of the most humbling experiences I've ever had. But after the service, I had about 9 people standing around me. Like, it was like this circle, and they were asking me all these questions. And because I can be distractible. I heard another family, there was a group, and they were talking about a 42-year-old husband and father of two that had gone to the hospital, and he had died. And I stopped what I was doing. I said, can you give me just a second? And I went over and I asked him. I was like, wait a minute, what happened? And they told me the story, and almost, not flippantly, but casually. And I thought, this is like, that's a story. If it just happened once, where helicopters should have been flying over the hospital with their spotlight on it, with like 1,000 people outside protesting the demise of this man. And we got to a point where we started almost like, well, that's just what happens. And it felt so foreign to hear the casualness that I was listening to people talk about, private businesses, family businesses closing, and they were talking about it casually. They were using phrases, like very early on, essential and non-essential. And the minute I heard that, I looked at Shelley, my wife, and I was like, uh-oh, we're going back into like tyrannical history. Like, those words should never be uttered in the United States of America.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as essential or non-essential. Like, we're all essential under, and she actually asked me when, right after Fauci and Deborah Birx, Dr. Birx had given these edicts and they were closing everything down, she asked me if I was allowed to go to work, if I was allowed to go to my clinic. And I was a single provider, single owner, so I didn't have any administrators. It was me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, and she asked the question, like, is there somebody you need to call? I was like, call? But you mean like God? Like, hey, God, can, like, the sovereign citizen, like, do I need somebody else's authority to go, go to my practice and take care of people? Even the fact that she said that, I mean, that's how quickly we kind of, people fell victim to the narrative that was being pushed on us.
Well, it's interesting, and because it was pushed from the highest levels of the land, Dr. Fauci and Deborah Birx. I remember a couple of years ago when Deborah Birx came out with her book, and I listened to her on television talk about it, and she made this statement. She said, I never believed that these vaccines would keep people from getting COVID. She said, and I never believed that it would keep other people from getting it from you. In other words, from spreading it. I never believed any of those things. Now, here was a gal who stood up in front of the American people with Dr. Fauci and deceived Donald Trump, who didn't know anything about these things at the earliest stage, deceived him into believing that they were telling the truth. And then, indeed, if you got the so-called vaccine or the jab, that you would be protected from getting it. And yet Dr. Fauci got COVID several times, and the president of the United States, Joe Biden, got it at least four or five times. So the deception was great, wasn't it?
I don't know if I wrote about it in the first book, but I liken it to it was the greatest lie ever sold in the history of the world. I can't think of any other situation that, because it wasn't, obviously it wasn't just the United States. You look at Canada, holy cow, the UK,
right,
Australia, New Zealand.
Health Organization, everybody had capitulated to it. You go down to New Zealand and people were losing their jobs because they wouldn't capitulate to the demands of the state. And this became a virtual kind of war, and the casualties were great, not only in America, but all over the world, so that the latest studies have shown that those who died of the jabs were far greater than those that died of COVID. I'm looking. Go ahead.
We're not even going to. We're goodness gracious. When Dr. Zelenko was in Israel and he was talking in front of the health, Israeli health authority.
Right.
And he made the statement, and this was like probably early 21. And he made the statement that his estimation was that 2 billion people were going to die after getting the jabs. And I thought, no way. And this, I was still under the impression, this was, or it was end of December, end of 2020, beginning of 21. My pushback against the shots was all of the models that they did trying to get a coronavirus or an RSV, vaccine. Mm-hmm. And when they introduced it to the ferret and cat models, they all died after being exposed to the wild type virus. And I thought, well, that's a bad, that's not a good, that's a bad statistic. Mm-hmm. So my whole take is let's see, 3 to 5 years of safety data first before I would ever even consider,
right,
recommending it. I mean, I would never, ever, ever get it because it was so easily treatable, but especially during 2020.
Yeah.
But this idea, and what you just brought up, it's not just the deaths, it's the turbo cancers, it's the autoimmune issues, it's
right,
it's the neuropathies, the tinnitus. I'm on a group with now about 5,000 vaccine injured people from across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I was invited to speak on it. And I remember the first, it was a Saturday. And I hopped on the Zoom call. I was on that call for 13 straight hours.
Mm-mm-mm.
Talking to people all over the country.
Well, that's exhausting.
It was heartbreaking.
I mean, heartbreaking and exhausting.
Yeah. Because guess what? All of those people are gaslit. They can't go to their doctor and say, this was because of the vaccine. They would be dismissed.
Right.
So the doctor tells them, you need the vaccine, the jab. They get it. It destroys their system, and then they have no recourse.
Right.
There's no one that will help them.
And so their immunity now has been destroyed for other things. And the course has been set for an ongoing trajectory for who knows how many years as this protein thing goes through your body and begins to change everything. We don't know what the end result of it will be, but Dr. Robert Malone, who was there in the early stages, coming up with this kind of a protocol, the mRNA thing, came on this program just a few months ago and said, I warned, do not continue to give these shots. But they didn't heed. And so you were flooded with hundreds, if not thousands of people that were coming to you. Increasingly, it was like a viral move of people coming to you, crying out for help. And what is one man to do? We'll be right back after this, friends. The book is called The Most Dangerous Man in Washington. You'll find out why next.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
Thanks for joining us on Viewpoint today as we take a look at the aftermath of the COVID debacle. And what is continuing to happen, what has happened to medical practitioners. I have a very good friend who lost their license here in Virginia because of doing exactly the same thing that Scott Miller was doing there in the state of Washington. And it's a very dangerous thing to step out and ignore medical protocol that wasn't true. It just wasn't true. But it was preached as if it were true. You see, we have a lot of false doctrines in the church today, too, that are preached as if they're true, but they're not. And so we have to be very careful, very discerning, and it's very hard for people who are not medical practitioners that learn to trust their doctors to discern whether or not they're being told the truth. But here is our new friend, Scott Miller, who had met with an avalanche of hundreds, if not thousands, of people who were crying out for somebody to step up in the place and to do something for them when nobody else would, other than sending them to the death chambers, that is, hospitals, where they were dying by droves. And so I want to make his book available to you in a different way today. We're not going to offer it directly through this program. You're not going to call us and order it here, but you're going to go to Amazon. You're going to go to Amazon, The Most Dangerous Man in Washington by Scott Miller. And when you read this book, likely you're going to sit down and you're going to read for hours. You just are. Because in one sense, it's almost like a stream of consciousness of the man going through some of the most desperate hours and days and even years of this assault on American health, and nobody seemed to care, very few. So his wife Shelley was praying over him a few mornings, asking God to take over, that he would give Scott a break so he could rest and be present with his family. None of the patients that called could have any idea of the impossibility, however. I'm reading directly from his book. Shelley asked my take, said Scott, on what happened to me over that unending stream of sickness, why God didn't answer her prayer. Scott said, I know what you're saying, but I look at it like God did take over. He simply used me as a conduit to go into homes to hug people who were dying and give them hope. Not simply send medications, but to give reassurance, to hold their hands, to pray with them when there was nobody to stand with them. I desperately wanted to finally be home with my family. I wanted my phone to be silent. I needed to recharge, he said. Every part of my mind, body, and soul was begging for a respite from the extreme pressures, but God had different plans. I had the honor of serving these last few days and the likely outcomes, if I know what would have happened to those patients had I said no. It was sheer, utter madness. As I look at my schedule and text messages reconstructing the events, it should have been impossible. But God asked me to charge into a hellscape of illness and fear. That's pretty dramatic stuff, Scott.
I know that weekend very intimately, and I sadly every weekend subsequent to that, it somehow got worse and worse and worse.
Right.
But that weekend, oh my goodness! So we're sitting out back, and I had just done about a 50. It was like a 56 to 50 hour stint, you know, like managing my practice. Then I would stay up all night taking care of sick people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd laugh. It's like, oh, 50 hours. That's easy. You know, that's easy. Once you hit like 70, 73, you start to.
Is that why they train you doctors? Is that why they train you to endure long, 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 long eternal hours without rest as in med school?
That's the surgical residence. You know, where you're just, you know, it's funny because I've got the constitution to do it, but to maintain, you know, that was one of the things that I was curious about, because so many people were like, well, Scott, you can't possibly keep it. You know, I would say there was a period of 9 months where it was not 24/7, but maybe 20 plus hours a day, 7 days a week for 9 months. And every now and then, Shelly would knock me out. She'd give me a Benadryl for 5 hours.
Well, I'm surprised she didn't hit you with a rubber mallet.
Well, she already knew I had too many head traumas. She didn't want to add to that.
Well, how did your wife handle this? I mean, you're married. You have kids, right?
Correct.
Okay. And here you are out there saving the world. And what's going on in the family?
You know, 2020, it was actually blissful. It was probably one of the most fun times that we had because schools were closed.
We had a
cool property. We had an indoor pool. Our neighbors, like, we had parties at our house all the time. So, you know, since everybody's home, you know, it was really fun for the
family. I was
pretty busy, but. One of the problems is when we get into 2021, I thought, I started having health issues. I thought I had cancer. My son was having, he was having some neurologic regression. You know, we're like, hey, Kellen, can you put that in the wheelbarrow? And he's like, Dad, what's a wheelbarrow? I'm like,
oh, boy.
Whoa. Yeah. And so we ended up testing our house, and we had 4 neurotoxic molds in our house.
Wow.
And so, like, Stachybotrys and ochratoxin.
In other words, that stuff is just as dangerous as the COVID shots.
Oh, well, no, because it's dangerous. But, you know, what you were talking about, mRNA technology, and then they add, like, for crying out loud, you add the spike protein.
Right.
And I just want to throw this out for people, because it's not just, you know, I don't think I have spoken to somebody that has received one of the vaccines. It does not have some increased medical issue. They're like, well, I got it and I'm fine. Well, let's define fine. Let's look at our baseline of health and define fine.
Yeah.
Because the way it binds to the nicotinic acetylcholine receptors, it binds to the ACE2 receptors in your heart, in your lungs, in your kidneys, in your liver, you know. It damages your basket, the lining of your blood vessels. And so, you know, Dr. Peter McCullough does a pretty in-depth discussion on it, that, you know, natokinase and acetylcysteine and bromelain are not, it's not enough, because you've got to unbind that spike protein from these receptors. Sorry, I just went into a tangential thing. I apologize, but I was thinking about, as we look at it as a global thing, it's like, is COVID over? Good gracious, the amount of people with long haulers
it may be just starting, for all we know.
Tens and tens of millions of people, and then you add in 5G, you start going in. Hold on, I'm not going there. But
good, okay.
I'm not. But what I would say is, you know, if I told a pregnant woman to turn on the microwave for 10 minutes and stand in front of it, she would look at me like I was crazy.
All right. Well, Teddy Roosevelt made a very interesting statement, and you quote it in your book. In any moment of decision, the best thing you can do is the right thing. The next best thing is the wrong thing. And the worst thing you could do is nothing. Well, you did something. And you did what appeared to be the right thing, and you were getting positive response in people's lives for doing what you believed to be the right thing, while what you observed happening as people were observing and submitting to genuine medical protocol, they were dying like flies, right?
Yes, sir. It was bad. The hospital situation was so tragic. I don't want to call it tragic. I'll call it malicious and evil. It was probably the most emotionally difficult thing that I had to deal with in the context of knowing that the patients that were in the ICU, had they been at home and I was in their home, mm-hmm. I could have, based on, you know, with the few, you know, couple thousand home visits, you know, somebody that was sitting, you know, their oxygen saturation is, say, we'll pick a, what I would consider a challenging but benign number. Like, they're sitting at 73%. If they went into the hospital at 73%, they would be immediately put on mechanical ventilation, put on fentanyl, put on midazolam, put on paralytics, right? So I looked at it from an ethical standpoint, where I'm like, these are lives that should easily be saved. We should easily be able to prevent, you know, just their demise. And it was so difficult. I mean, fortunately, total Holy Spirit thing, where I changed how I addressed the doctors. I initially thought I could come to them with, like, as a, you know, collegially and right. talking about what I was seeing. That I didn't realize that didn't matter. They had their protocols. So I started getting almost like neurolinguistic program feedback. I had to get tricky. I had to change how I was addressing it.
Well, it was almost like, from their perspective, given the medical protocols, you were the one that was spreading the virus, not the virus itself.
I was told that. In fact, one of the state's expert witness said that because of my actions, it encouraged the encouragement of the spread of the disease in mm-hmm. such a reckless fashion yep. that I was. That she called me truly substantively evil. And I'm like, aw, that's a little harsh. It's a little harsh.
Yeah, well, that brings us to we need to make a transition here. There's a reason why the title of your book is The Most Dangerous Man in Washington. And again, we're not talking about Washington, D.C. We're talking about the state of Washington where you were practicing. And here's the transition. Shelley, your wife, was terrified that you were going to be targeted by the state's medical board and that you were going to be fined for not complying with making a 2-year-old wear a mask in a pediatric practice. So I told her I'd rather pay the fine than enforce a lie. But inevitably, after having the honor of treating thousands of COVID patients across the country, I had an emergency suspension of my medical license for prescribing ivermectin and openly speaking out about it. Ouch. I'm out of work, out of a practice. We'll be right back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by His Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
In that moment, with the attack from the state of Washington's medical board, Scott says we lost everything. The years of sacrifice, the blood, sweat, and tears that we poured into the medical practice was instantly gone. My wife had begged me not to be so vocal, to not speak at school boards, stop doing interviews that exposed the hospitals and doctors that were letting people die. This wasn't my plan from the start. I was faithfully hoping, I was trusting that God had a plan for my future. But now my clinic was technically closed. Now what, Scott? Your clinic was closed. Then what happened?
So, that day, all right, it was Friday. It was October 15th. I actually got COVID on Sunday, on the 10th. I had just spoken at a church. It was a fairly large, what I would call a health rally. And I'd been going for days. And that night, I remember we were having dinner around 10:30, and Shelley was like, "Scott, you need to hydrate, drink your water." I'm like, "Well, which glass is mine? What are you talking about? There's only one glass." I'm like, "Uh-oh." Like, I had diplopia, I had double vision, and I stood up, and I was just, I mean, it hit me. It was just like I just got absolutely clobbered. It took a day to make it go away. You know, I had one of my nurses come over, and she did the IV Regeneron, the monoclonal antibodies, and I took all of the stuff, and so the next day I was fine. But Shelly got sick, so I spent 2 days staying home with her, taking care of her. So when I got to my clinic, I walked in my office, and there's this big manila folder with, the Washington Medical Commission seal on it. And I opened it up, and I'm like, oh, no. It was a shock. Like I said, I had students with me. I had five nurses that had lost their jobs at hospitals for not getting the shots. They were volunteering. And we had a whiteboard that was already filled with new sick COVID patients. I had my pediatric patients. And I remember I asked everyone to leave my office for a minute. And I'm like, okay, Lord, this is not what I expected. I thought maybe I'd have a hearing, like if it got to it, that there'd be some justice,
Uh-huh.
And I'm like,
well, the system was way too strong. It was beyond political correctness. It was a system that actually was devised and run on purpose. It's hard to go to the root of all of the things that combined. It was like the perfect storm. Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum said, we need to use this moment to drive globalism in a new world order. You had a hyper-liberal president and Congress. You had all of these things going on, and a guy, Dr. Fauci, who was in it for himself, it seems, as ultimately began to be revealed, the dishonesty was promoted, and the billions and billions of dollars that were to be made by the pharmaceuticals. You put it all together, and money carried the day. Political power carried the day, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Well, and so to answer your question, I can be outside of the box thinker. By that afternoon, I had turned my clinic into a monoclonal antibody infusion center.
Wow.
And I called two colleagues of mine, because my credentials no longer, they didn't exist anymore. So they let me use their credentials to open up a portal with the state of Washington's infusion.
Uh-huh.
And so we ordered like 400 doses of Regeneron. There was a clinic about an hour and a half from us. It had extra doses, so I sent a runner to that clinic. And so we literally, from that afternoon, so it was about 4 hours later, where we made the full legal transition into an infusion center. And because it was so difficult because I was running into so much pushback from pharmacies, not just, I prescribed ivermectin, I don't know, 100,000 doses of ivermectin through that time. I just had to do it cleverly.
Uh-huh.
But I was getting pushback, so I basically bought I basically bought a small pharmacy. So I had thousands of doses of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine.
And did you find ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, which had been proven to be safe and had been used effectively for other diseases, did you find them efficacious then with the COVID situation?
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. Now, I would never consider using them as like mono or bi therapy, because if you're early on, but anybody that was having any type of respiratory issues, mm-hmm. always, I mean, nebulizing budesonide, you know, which is a nebulized steroid. I had people nebulizing saline. I made up mixtures of, you know, saline with hydrogen peroxide and colloidal silver.
Mm. And, oh, okay.
You know, MSM, et cetera, glutathione. But even if we take it from a context of, let's say that it didn't work, its side effect profile is lower than Tylenol.
Right.
Because that's what they told people to do, go home and take Tylenol, balm their liver, yeah. and decrease their...
But they said if you gave them ivermectin, you'd be giving them medicine for horses and treat them like horses.
Yeah, and I had used it, I had already used it for a decade in kids with scabies and head lice, et cetera. I mean, so uh-huh. When I read the studies, and there was a study out of Australia, I think April 3rd or 4th of 2020, where it said, you know, 5,000 decrease, you know, reduce viral load. I'm like, what? That's cool. Like, why isn't this being shouted from the mountaintops? So I just started using it very early on. And, you know, once you have, you know, one patient is an anecdote of one, you know, 100 patients, okay, 500, 1,000, 2,500. You know, once you're getting into the, you know, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 patients where... Mm-hmm. They're the ones giving me the feedback. Like, I'm not making it up. They're
right.
calling and be like, hey, like, I'm feeling way better. I'm like, yay, like, let's keep going. Like,
and that's why they kept coming, and they would tell others about it, and it happened virally, didn't it?
Yeah, well, I didn't advertise. It's not like I had a bill. There was
right.
no billboard. No, it was all word of mouth. And we asked that question. My front office, my thing was always ask, like, well, how did you – I had a pediatric practice. I'm taking care of 90-year-olds, you know? And it was like, how did they even know to call? And
uh-huh.
it's another God thing where, the book I could write about how they knew to call. And it's like, well, I heard from a friend who this and this and that. I'm like,
right.
there is no coincidence. It gave me chills every time I heard like that question. I'm like, well, how did you know to call me? And they would tell this story. I'm like, That's a total God thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had to trust the Lord in very big ways here, pressing on amid unbelievable stress. In fact, you said your wife and you found yourselves at odds almost every day because the attacks were coming so profoundly, and not just medically, but politically and even legally,
but
right?
She was scared for our safety. You
of
know,
course.
And when I say this, I mean, she is the most incredible human being ever.
Well, she must be.
And I told her, there were times where I call her Shelly Dawn, but I'm like, love. Because she would ask questions, like reasonable questions, right? And I couldn't answer them. Because mm-hmm. everything she said, like, Scott, what's your plan or what are you going to do? Or what? And I'm like, my response was like, I don't know. What's your plan B? I'm like, I don't know. This wasn't my plan A. Like, I had a great pediatric practice. I loved what I did. Like, I wanted nothing to do with what was happening.
Yeah.
With all this
drama that had become utterly devastating, but you faced.
History,
go ahead.
Right. If we look at history and, you know, the history books and, or you watch a movie where, you know, a family gets pulled out of their home and, you know, by the Gestapo or, you know, whatever. And you look at whether it's the atrocities in the Soviet Union, going, you know, Germany, whatever, pick your place. And it's like, well, I would have stood up. And, you know, people, they want the.
I would have stood up except when the gun is facing at their head, right?
And that was the thing. It's like everybody's a hero until the gun is pointed at you. It's like, Are you a Christian? Like, yes, and then the gun's pointed at you. It's
well,
like,
that's why I wrote the book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times, because that's exactly the position that most Christians in America are in, radically unprepared for that which is coming.
Right. Because it's easy to bend, and, you know, people, so I don't care. You know, I just never wore a mask. And even Shelley would say, why won't you do it? Like, because I won't wear a lie. Other people are looking to me. Other people are looking to me, and they're trusting the words that I say, but they're also trusting my actions.
All right. So you didn't want to be a medical Pharisee.
Well, right. Because if they know that I know that it doesn't work and I'm solely doing it to whatever, appease a store or to not get yelled at. I always looked at it. It was, you know, I remember fairly early on, this woman came up to me. It was a Safeway. And she tapped me on the shoulder and she said, Jesus can see you're not wearing a mask. And I turned to her and I was like, I know, right? Like, I didn't get it. It was like, I know. And I was listening to a virology lecture, actually. And I said, can I chat with you for a moment? And so we ended up having actually a really beautiful conversation.
Uh-huh.
And in the end, so I, you know, she was black, you know, African-American. She was a black woman.
Uh-huh.
And I was telling her, like, my concerns about how it inordinately can affect African-Americans or black people because there's less vitamin D and we're above the 36th parallel, all these things. And so I just did some Googling and I showed her statistics on it. And in the end, like, we walked up to the checkout counter and I asked for, you know, like a receipt paper and a pen, and I wrote my name and phone number on it. And I gave it to her. I said, listen, if you ever need anything, this is myself, please don't hesitate to call me.
Uh-huh.
And that never would have happened if I was wearing a mask.
Yeah, there you go. Well, many of us, even Christians, are wearing a mask today in our society, pretending that we're not part of the culture, but we really are. And so we're prepared to succumb to every wind of doctrine, to every force that's out there, every lie that's going to be presented, and not able to stand in the evil day. And there are lessons to be learned here that's not just about medicine, not just about COVID, but about life itself. You wrote, in a stream of consciousness and anger, I began to write. You wrote a poem, and I just wanted to read one stanza of this poem. Hate, I want to tell the world what I have heard. Expose all their deeds, sinfully absurd. Deception and lies behind every word. Killing innocent lives, undeterred. I want to burn them down, ashes to earth. Hate, I feel you deep within. How did you deal with that hate? You're hating, you weren't hating people, you were hating the evil that was done.
I was hating the outcomes.
Yeah,
I was hating
exactly.
The outcomes. I was hating the fear that was disseminated on people. I was hating the inability to get life-saving information and care to people. You know, I actually felt bad for this. I felt bad for the doctors and nurses, sort of, because
they were weak. You know, they were weak. They were unprepared. They just succumbed to every wind of doctrine, however true or not true it was, in order to fit in. And not be rejected.
You know, I think about it. If I would have been in that situation, I laugh because I brought that up to Shelley. She's like, what would I have done if I was in that same situation? She's like, you would have been fired. I'm like, okay, that's right. they would have fired me because I wrote in the book, like, God removed.
Well, they fired you from the medical association. That's what they did.
Exactly.
Hey, thanks so much, Scott, for joining us. I know this thing is heavy on your mind, on your heart. The book, my friends, The Most Dangerous Man in Washington, you're going to get it by going to Amazon this time. To the Amazon, you're going to get a copy of the book that you're not going to want to put down. Scott Miller has been our guest. You're going to thoroughly appreciate. You might actually have some holy righteous anger arise in your own mind and heart, just like it did for Jesus when he went into the temple and overturned the tables of the money changers. That's what Scott Miller did in Washington with regard to the medical situation. God bless him and God bless you, my friends. Become a partner with us. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.